You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Tonight's live broadcast rolls on Saturday evening, February 18th, and we're getting into the highlight of the evening. Not one but two all-stars this hour to hand out grades to the Trump administration after its first month on the job. Joining us first, Dr. Kevin McDonald, our good friend, former professor of psychology at California State University, Long Beach. He's the author of several books and currently serves as the editor of the Occidental Quarterly. Check him out online as well at the Occidental Observer. He's returning to the show this evening to assess, as I just mentioned, the first month of the Trump administration. So, Kevin, this should come as old hand to you. Being a former university professor, you're going to give out a grade tonight. But here's the criteria. Here's the criteria. We can't grade Trump against what Kevin McDonald would have done as president, nor can we grade, because he would fall short of the standard, nor can we grade Trump against other presidents, because obviously compared to other presidents, he would get an A+. We must grade Trump on what we could have realistically expected him to do based upon his campaign promises and based upon the candidacy that he presented to the American people up until Election Day. So, with that being the criteria, what would you objectively grade Trump's first month on the job?
Well, I would still give him an A. I think he has tried his best to carry out everything he said in his campaign promises. You know, particularly on immigration, he's starting those things. He's building the wall. He's the travel ban order. Now, of course, these things are going to be just intensely contested, and they are. You know, you can see that with the courts. But it's not really his fault. He's got to, you know, overcome those things. He's going to reissue some orders next week, I think. And he'll probably clean up some of the legal issues there. But I think that he really has tried to do what he set out to do. And to the extent that, you know, it seems chaotic and difficult, you know, there's a new crisis every day. You know, a lot of this is the media. And there's just no question he is going after the media now. I mean, he's not just taking it. And I do think that, you know, his supporters are tuned into that. I think that they have gotten to the point where they don't really believe the media anymore, the mainstream media. And I think that Trump is trying to marginalize the media. I mean, he's been doing this through the whole campaign. I went to one of his rallies out here, and he called in the most dishonest people in the world, and that was back in, you know, last summer sometime. So it was it's been difficult, obviously, but. I don't see any real complaint about what he's done. I just don't have any.
This is Keith, Kevin. Let me ask you, yeah. You know, your special area of interest is Jewish power and influence. We've heard about this purported bromance between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. Based on my observation, if there's a bromance going on, it's between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. What do you think about all of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is something. I mean, the fact is that all presidents have to deal with the Israel lobby, and they can't just, you know, do what they want with respect to Israel. It's politically disastrous, and especially given that the Republican base is very strongly pro-Israel. Trump doesn't want to lose that base. And so, you know, he is coming out. You know, they had a meeting last week, but the reality is he actually, you know, told Netanyahu that Israel should slow down the settlements. He's not going to move the embassy to Jerusalem right away. And I had the feeling that, you know, he talked about a one-state solution. Well, you know, if they do have a one-state solution, it's going to have to be within the context of an apartheid society, because if they had a one state between the, you know, between the Mediterranean and the River Jordan, I mean, it would be, you know, half Palestinian basically, and in the future it'd be majority Palestinian. So they can't have a democracy there, and it's a situation that, you know, I think that Trump would probably like to, you know, see how it develops and put pressure on the Israelis. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, my main issue in life is immigration, the demographic future in this country. And I think we have to cut Trump some slack on what goes on in Israel with respect to that, because and I think to some extent he's trying to get cover in the media and certainly with his base by doing this sort of thing. But of course, it doesn't work with the media. The media is unbelievable. I mean, I have never seen anything like this. I don't think anybody has seen anything like this. I mean, I get the Washington Post emails every day, and it's just like five or six just hit pieces on Trump, just really vicious.
Kevin, this is Keith again. Let me just ask you this. Do you think he's beginning to connect the dots between the negativity he's getting from the liberal elite and Jewish power and influence?
Of course, there's a big difference between understanding it and being able to do something about it, as Richard Nixon and Billy Graham once lamented.
Do you see any evolution in his outlook at all?
Quite right. It's a big difference. I think he does understand it. There's a lot of comment among the Jewish media about his press conference. And basically what they were saying is that they asked him about anti-Semitism, and he didn't really talk about Jews, and he didn't really say the right thing. So I think he understands what's going on. I'm a little worried that at times, with the Dream Act children, he wants to have a big heart or something. And, you know, that's the kind of thing we can't have at this point. You know, we can't stoop to that anymore. If the president really tries to virtue signal and be a good guy, it's just really going to be a disaster. So I think Trump has to be tough. In his comments on anti-Semitism, he talked about racism and stuff like that. But I think this is boilerplate at this point. We have to see what he's going to do. I mean, it's very heartening what he's doing with immigration. This plan about calling out the National Guard, I mean, this would completely derange the
yes.
mainstream media and the left. It would just put them into a tailspin.
That's a good point. I hadn't brought that up yet tonight. Going back to Israel very quickly, even Netanyahu, he's even gotten Netanyahu to admit, of course, we understand that Israel is an ethnostate. Israel is a Jew-only state. And, of course, that's great as far as they're concerned, and no one takes them to task on it. In fact, they're alleged to be our greatest ally. I think our greatest ally should be Russia.
Of course, we would allege that America is an ethnostate and has been a white ethnostate.
We would want for our domestic policy what Israel already has. But to that end, Netanyahu said in a recent conversation vis-a-vis Trump is that, hey, our border wall works great, and we're going to support him putting a border wall up too. No Israeli prime minister or president has ever supported a wall on our border, but Trump is getting the Jews to play ball on that, at least that much. Now, as far as the other stuff, he just basically says these allegations of anti-Semitism and racism are insulting, and he just moves on, which is, of course, all you can do, I guess, as the sitting president. But we got to take a break. We'll be back with more McDonald's right after this.
Attention, Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
This is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and I want to introduce you to Numana Storable Foods. This is the first brand of storable foods that I am willing to put my name behind. It's food you can trust. No GMOs, no MSG, no chemical preservatives, and no fake meat. Plus, Numana doesn't just make that claim. They back it up with independent evaluation and testing. Another thing that Numana really does that excites me is the delicious vegetarian options. If your standards are as high as mine, I can confidently tell you that Numana Storable Foods are the quality choice that you've been waiting for. Numana won't just meet your expectations, they will exceed them. And that's why we're thrilled to have the good guys from Numana joining the Power Hour family. Go to powerprepper.com and learn about Numana Storable Foods. You can also call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Numana, the storable food you'll love to eat.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Well, folks, the political cesspool is offering to Donald Trump his first report card. 1 month in, and he passed Kevin McDonald's course. Dr. McDonald gave the Trump administration an A after its first month on the job. Keith Alexander and I were talking about it during the break. Keith also gave him an A based upon the standards that we laid out earlier in the hour. I gave him an A-. So either way you score it, he's doing well. And, of course, it's hard not to give him a high grade based upon the fact that 4 months, 4 weeks on the job, just a day or two under one full month on the job, he has already taken the bull by the horns and addressed the refugees, stopping the immigration from so-called refugees from terrorist nations. He has taken on the wall. He has called the press the enemy of the American people. He has taken on the judiciary. That is a lot in the first 4 weeks. Of course, he's done much more than that, as we've been breaking down each and every week. Those are just some of the highlights. He's taken on even the right to life issue. Most Republican presidents complete social issue, forget social issues altogether after they win the White House.
Take the oath of allegiance.
Yes, he hasn't, and there's been so much more than that. And again, too much to cover in the time now. We've been recapping it each week. The first four shows after he's been inaugurated, which we were there for, of course. So that's a lot in one short month, Kevin. And what would you make of his press conference a couple of days ago and also the rally today? What were your biggest takeaways from those two events, which were pretty profound?
Well, his press conference was just amazing. A lot of commentary. He just went after the media, and It was a pleasure to see that. I think the whole Trump phenomenon has been a civics lesson to Americans. We thought this was a democracy, but then we sort of realized that these Republican and Democratic candidates have to be vetted by the big money. Trump got through that. He actually got elected. The entire establishment, all the elite institutions, were against him. The media is against him. The courts now we're finding are against him. The academic world certainly. Left to right, these neocons, everybody's against them. And now we find beyond that, you have this sort of deep state thing going on, where these unelected bureaucrats are sabotaging the Trump presidency. I mean, we just don't. I think we all think of the government differently than we did you know, say a year ago. You know,
I don't think we do, Kevin, but I think that the American people are.
Average person. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I personally was not really aware of this deep state, but, you know, it certainly makes a lot of sense. You've got all these holdovers from Obama. You've got neocons who've been there from George Bush and before that. And these people hate Trump. And so,
and it's a fourth branch of government, actually. Opposition. It's actually a fourth branch of government. It's a group of fifth columnists in there. And I think he realizes that there's nothing to be gained whatsoever by playing patty cake with them or pulling any punches. It's going to be a death match in there.
They've got to have a wholesale firing of these appointees. I mean, think about the Justice Department, the EPA, the intelligence services. All these people have all these crusading leftists that are just a huge percentage now of the employees there. And they're going to do everything they can to slow him down, to do what to stop anything he wants to do.
Unfortunately, you got the Hatch Act, which allows them, they have to have civil service protection. That's the big impediment for it.
It's very difficult. But, without that, you know, it's a huge break on what Trump wants to do in a lot of areas. We'll see what happens. But I worry about that now. I mean, the General Flynn going down. Was obviously because of these people in the intelligence community that didn't like him, that didn't like Trump, and fundamentally a bogus. It wasn't to my mind. It was not a serious breach, although apparently he did misrepresent what was said. The point is that Trump is not really in charge of his own administration, and probably won't be for some time. And it's going to slow things down, and we have to hope that he can overcome that.
I hope that he moves his whole base of operations down to Mar-a-Lago in Red State America, away from snooping eyes and ears in D.C.
Well, once you actually get that far south, you have to go north to find the south again once you get down past Miami. But once you get down to the Keys, you have to go north to get south. But anyway, no matter how you slice it, Kevin, and I'm going to talk about this with Jared Taylor, who's coming up immediately after you. And as you know, we were both there along with Sam Bushman and his associate, Kirk Crosby. I've said this several times, even a couple of times tonight, unfathomable that was less than a month ago that Trump was sworn in, because so much action has taken place on serious issues. He actually intended and intends to make good on his campaign promise, which I guess separates him from every other American president in my lifetime, at least, and probably going back much further than that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many people said, oh, he's not going to build a wall. He's not going to do this, not going to do that. Well, he's doing it. He's really, coming through on his promises. And, you know, his campaign rally today in Florida, you know, I think he's making the decision to go directly to the people. That, you know, one of the things you said today was he didn't want to have his administration filter through the media. He wants a direct route, you know, and I think he'll continue to do that.
Well, I think, too, being able to relate somewhat to Trump's mentality, as any dominant male would do, when you're pushed like this, it makes you that much more determined to see through your agenda. I think his resolve will only be strengthened by the opposition he's receiving from the press and the judiciary. That's how I would respond. I'm sure that's how you and Keith would respond. If you're being, frankly, screwed with by these effeminate girly men, it only makes you want to push through your agenda that much more. So I think, if anything, they're emboldened him to be more resolute.
Let me say this too, if I could,
really,
Kevin.
Right about that, he's an alpha male, and that the anger that he's got towards the press really came out in that press conference.
Well, furthermore, Kevin, this is Keith Alexander. Let me just say this: I think his Melbourne rally was great because it made the mainstream media cover something positive, a positive reaction by the public to him, and he's got to go to Red State America to do that.
All right, final word to you, Kevin. Continue the thought you were sharing just a moment ago.
What's that? Yeah.
No, I was just saying, final word to you. We only have a few seconds remaining.
Well,
you were saying
word.
You
I, mean, I think Trump's doing great. I think he's trying his best to carry out what he said he was going to do. But what we're seeing is just a massive opposition from every elite institution in this country and within the deep state and these bureaucrats in the federal government, it's going to be a tough, long, long haul. And even some in the GOP are not on board. You know, I think the odds on his impeachment are now about even money in some of these London betting houses. So, you know, there's a real possibility that these people will succeed in getting rid of him. But, you know, I think he's going to go down fighting, and it's going to be, one hell of a fight. He's going to try to do what he said he's going to do.
Well, I know what side we've chosen if it comes to that. And, you know, with where the American people are right now, I don't know if they want to push impeachment, because I don't know what backlash there would be from Red State America. You watched that rally today. These were two strokes of genius, that press conference earlier in the week and then that rally today. The American people are with Trump, 55%, according to Rasmussen, give him a favorable job approval rating. If you push that far and you try to impeach him for carrying out all he has done is tried to carry out on the promises that the people voted him in because of, if you try to impeach him for that, I don't know what the reaction would be at this late date in American history, demographically speaking, and I don't know if we want to find out.
They're using the template they used on Richard Nixon, who won by a historic landslide 49-1, and they're already using Watergate language like, what did the president know and when did he know it?
Well, theoccidentalobserver.net, that's all anybody needs to know right now, theoccidentalobserver.net. Stay tuned with the latest from Kevin MacDonald. He's a man among boys, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin MacDonald, one of our heroes here. Thank you, Doctor.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. New York family court judge Patricia Gallagher has ordered a drug-addicted prostitute not to get pregnant again until she can regain custody of her newborn son, who is the fourth child to have been taken from the woman because of parental neglect. The testimony in this case clearly established that the mother had little or no prenatal care, that the baby was born prematurely with a positive toxicology for illegal drugs, and that the mother admitted use of illegal drugs during her pregnancy, wrote the judge, who went on to say that this court has seen about a half dozen seemingly nice couples show up as respondents in neglect cases where both are addicted to heroin and literally throwing their lives away and the lives of their children in just this year, insisting that this case is one where the respondent neglectful mother should be using birth control. Judge Gallagher ordered the State Department of Human Services to cover any contraceptive expenses. She also ordered the woman, identified as Brandy F., to submit to regular supervision and warned that she would be incarcerated if she becomes pregnant. Having no more pregnancies should be ordered, like the drug treatment, mental health treatment, and parenting classes provisions, which are boilerplate now, insists Gallagher. More than a decade ago, Gallagher served as a clerk to a judge who issued a very similar no-pregnancy order that was eventually overturned by an appeals court. If you want a win-win-win opportunity for patriots, think GiveMeLibertyFund.com. For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's WorldAffairsBrief.com. For the news the networks refuse to use, turn to LibertyNewsDaily.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Oh, yeah. Oh. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, the last time Jared Taylor was on the air with us was 4 weeks ago, and it was the day after Trump was sworn in as President of the United States. Of course, Jared and I were both there in Washington to attend that historic event, and he was on with us the day after that. Trump was sworn in on a Friday. We were live the next day from Washington on Saturday night. So now here we are a month later with Jared once again. Of course, he is the editor of American Renaissance, amren.com. Jared, does it seem, I have mentioned this so much, but perhaps perception can vary from person to person. Does it seem that it's only been a month since Trump was sworn in? To me, it seems like at least a year.
An awful lot has happened, and it does have a kind of a head-spinning effect. But yes, I guess it's just been 1 month. But of course, the way he has been rocking the boat with every step he takes has stirred up the press so much that that's practically all we hear about in the news is, what is Donald Trump done next? No, it's great.
He's certainly given me a year's worth of content in those 4 short weeks. There's no doubt about that. We have our plate is overflowing here on the program each and every Saturday night, trying to offer our commentary on the latest news involving the administration. And with that being said, I will ask you the same question I asked Kevin McDonald in the first segment of this hour. That is for your grade of the Trump administration after its first month on the job. And again, the standard of measurement is this. We will not grade Trump against what a President Jared Taylor would do, because, of course, he would fall short of the mark, nor will we grade him against what other presidents before him have done, because, of course, compared to them, he will be A-plus all the time. But we will grade Trump based upon what we could have legitimately and realistically expected from him based upon his candidacy. So with that being the standard of measurement, Jared, what would you grade the Trump administration after 30 days?
I'm afraid I'd have to give him maybe a B+. There are things that he certainly could have done, but I think in general he's turned in a good, solid performance. I'd be curious to know what grade did Kevin McDonald give him?
Keith Alexander, who's in with me, of course, my co-host, gave him an A. I gave him an A-. Kevin gave him an A. So between the four of us, he's still acing the course. But elaborate, Sam Bushman gives him a B-. So overall, he's still doing remarkably well, especially by the by the measurement of an American president. But elaborate a little bit more on why he's not acing your course, Jared.
Well, the main objection I have is that he has not repealed DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. That's something that he could have done absolutely his first day in office. And he had talked about doing that. He doesn't need Congress. He doesn't need the courts. He doesn't need anybody. As your listeners know, these are people who were brought illegally as children to the United States. And now it looks as though he might back down on his promise. He was going to throw out every single illegal immigrant. And it looks like he may be waffling on this to the point where he's going to let him stay. I'm disappointed. I wanted him to be true and good and straight on every single illegal immigrant, and he's waffling on that. The other thing that disappoints me is that when he put on this travel ban, they are all Muslim countries, it's true, but he couched this travel ban in terms of fighting terrorism. And that, to me, is not a particularly persuasive reason to ban those countries. There are other much better reasons to keep Somalis and Yemenis and Iraqis out of the country. And I wish he had not done it in terms of fighting terrorism. My preference would have been that he study the question very carefully, see how he could couch his regulations as carefully as possible, and then, sure enough, ban Muslims. Because if he was going to keep terrorists out, as many people have pointed out, those 19 people who were the engineers of the September 11 attacks in 2001, every one of them was a Saudi, for heaven's sake. He certainly hasn't banned Saudis. So I would rather, you know what it reminds me? It reminds me of the Southerners who tried to defend segregation in the name of states' rights, rather than coming right out and saying, look, we have a race problem.
What?
I wish Trump had come right out and said, look, we have a Muslim problem, and really taken the bull by the horns in that way. So those are my two big objections.
Well, Jared, this is Keith Alexander. You mentioned, obliquely at least, the issue of race, which, of course, is your your calling card. So let me ask you this. You had an article on your website this week. Can the Trump court end affirmative action, or can Trump end affirmative action? What do you think the prospects are that we'll make some progress or actually end affirmative action under the Trump administration?
I think they're really pretty good. My guess is that Neil Gorsuch, the guy he's appointed to fill Scalia's seat, I think he'll be confirmed. And I think he will be a strong, solid vote against racial preferences that discriminate against non-whites. But, as the article points out, that leaves us really with the same old court that we had before under Scalia. We had four solid people, four traitors to white people. Well, some of them aren't white to begin with, so don't call them traitors, I suppose. But in any case, you had this 4-4 balance with Kennedy as a swing vote, and Kennedy was always waffling. You'd never count on him, and he was never a guy who was going to say, nope, you got to stop discriminating against white people. So it's going to require two Supreme Court appointments. On the other hand, there's another approach that Donald Trump could take, and he hasn't said one word about this, and that is to try to get a Republican-controlled Congress to repass the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and say, this time we really mean it. And that means no discrimination against white.
Well, you know, Jared, he really doesn't even have to do that. The plain language of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, just like the hate crime law, is race neutral. It prohibits racial discrimination. You could have Jeff Sessions just step in there and say, I'm going to start enforcing these laws based on their plain language and the plain meaning of their language, which is they prohibit racial discrimination, so he could attack affirmative action that way. He could also attack black-on-white hate crime the same way.
Yeah, Keith and I, Jared, both nearly swallowed our microphones when you made mention of that, because that's something Keith has mentioned at least 2 or 3 weeks consecutively, is that if we just enforced these laws as they were written, it would be just fine. Or it'll at least be much better than where we've been.
The trouble is, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 has been, in effect, interpreted by the Supreme Court in this twisted and completely anti-white way. I don't think you can say, okay, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, there it is, we're just going to enforce it because of all these Supreme Court precedents. However, if you pass a law and making it much more specific, this applies to university, this applies to any attempt by corporation to expand so-called diversity at the expense of whites and men. I think you've put it in very, very clear language, you might get something that wouldn't require a Supreme Court decision. Because the Supreme Court has not decided that discrimination against whites is required. It says the Constitution permits it. It doesn't require it. And if you have a law that forbids it explicitly, I don't think that you would need a Supreme Court decision. But, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I think, that's the way I read the situation myself.
Okay. You may not be a lawyer, but Keith is. Keith, what's your opinion?
Well, my opinion is that the plain language is there, and all of this was hashed out ad nauseum in the run-up to the passage of the 64 Civil Rights Act. In fact, Hubert Humphrey said, if there is anything in this law that can be used to justify a mere statistical imbalance as being proof of racial discrimination, I'll eat this law page by page. And it was as big as the Washington, D.C. phone book. And they have specific language in there saying that it's not going to be used like that. And, of course, that's exactly what the EEOC, the enforcement mechanism provided for the law that is part of the law, said with a green light from that great conservative Richard Nixon in 1969. That's when it started. That's when the anti-white animus and interpretation of it began.
Yes,
5 years after it was passed.
Yes, it started very shortly under Richard Nixon, as you say. But given that the Supreme Court has permitted this kind of discrimination, despite the plain language of the law, it seems to me that it would be very difficult for Jeff Sessions suddenly to say, okay, I'm going to interpret this law as it was written. I don't care what the Supreme Court has said. I think that you would have to have a new law in order for that to work. It would, as soon as he started enforcing that law in the way you and I understand it, then it would go up to the Supreme Court anyway, because there'd be an immediate challenge because of all these Supreme Court precedents that permit discrimination against white people. But
what we've proven with the Judge Roberts thing is that you don't even have to have a good reason to take it to federal court. Thank you very much.
All right, hang on 1 second. We got another segment with Jared coming up right after the break. In the meantime, folks, while we're in break, go to amren.com. The American Renaissance Conference for 2017 has been announced. It'll be coming to Tennessee this summer. Register during the break. We'll be back with Jared in 3 minutes.
Here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Well, my family is a very interesting family because we're what you would call a stable family. My family doesn't smoke or drink because my mother brought me up in a Christian home. I guess that's what kind of has kept me straight because I've always looked up to the Lord.
Every day, an estimated 3,000 teens start smoking.
My parents always taught me, you know, the difference between right and wrong. They always taught me that smoking isn't right because physically it's not good for you, and also mentally it affects you. And they always try to do the right thing because things catch up to you in life sooner or later. I think kids learn behavior patterns from their parents because they're the people that they mostly see. They're the people who we love and respect. So the people who you love the most and respect the most from is who you tend to take things from.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right. The only thing that's gone by faster than Trump's first 4 weeks and change in office has been this show on any given night since he was inaugurated. And it's going by quickly tonight. Of course, when you have talent like Jared Taylor on the line, it does happen to do that. Jared, I'm going to ask you a question. Then we've got a caller from Alaska who wants to get on the line with you. Then we're going to ask you to plug American Renaissance. We're going to do all that in 10 minutes. But one thing I like about this program is that we're very objective with regards to Trump. We don't just lavish him with unnecessary or unwarranted praise. We will hold him accountable. You gave him the lowest grade of the night, although it was still a good grade at a B. But what would you say that he's done that pleases you most, that gives you the most hope that there will be substantial change under a Trump administration that we certainly wouldn't have seen under a Hillary Clinton or Mitt Romney or John McCain administration?
There are two things, really. He has really gotten serious about keeping federal money away from sanctuary cities. And already, some of those cities are caving in. Miami, of all places.
Yes.
Mayor Carlos Jimenez, a man of that name, has already said, look, I can't fight City Hall. I'm going to do as I'm told, and I'm going to turn these criminals over to ICE. That's great. We've got a number of real holdouts, Seattle, Chicago, New York City, but I think they'll cave eventually, too. Nobody can hold out against the federal government if they really say, okay, you guys are criminals, and we're going to withhold federal money. That's a really great thing that he's doing. Something else also that I understand that Jeff Sessions has started research into is how genuinely to enforce the law against immigrants who go on the public charge within 5 years of getting here. If they go on any means-tested program within those 5 years, they're supposed to get the boot. And I think an overwhelmingly large number of Americans would be in favor of that. They've got no business waltzing into our country and then sucking on the public teat. I think even a bunch of Democrats would think that was fine. Kick those parasites out. And, of course, the previous administration had been very, very lax about that. So those two things are to me very, very encouraging. If they are enforced the way they should, I think that could have a big effect. That could have a chilling effect on the ones who are here, and that'll keep more illegals from coming. I think those two are very promising.
Jared, this is Keith. Of course, the response of the left is going to be to run to the federal courts, which they've been doing ever since the Brown case. And that's how the 3% rule against the wishes of the 97%, as they have been doing for the past 62, 63 years now, since the Brown decision. That's always going to be the trump card, no pun intended, of the left to any of these activities that he does. So I guess it all really gets down to, if we're going to be playing by their rules, is how does Trump control the federal judiciary? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, apparently, he is likely to have the opportunity to appoint more federal judges in the next 4 years than just about anybody has in 4 years. There are lots of vacancies on the court. Also, when it comes to this question of kicking out illegals or kicking out immigrants who go on the public dole, again, there should be no ambiguity there. That's what the law says. I wish they weren't allowed to go on the dole for 10 years, 15 years, 50 years, the whole time they're here. Any immigrant that starts putting his foot in the public trough, as far as I'm concerned, out. The law is pretty clear about that. Also, when he's talking about withholding money from sanctuary cities, these cities are already, some of them, giving up the ghost on that without any kind of court decision at all. I think that, and I haven't heard much about how the courts would handle that. Of course, as you say, the ACLU can always step into the game and try to throw as much sand into the gears as possible. That's what they love to do. But I think even threatening is already getting a certain amount of results, and we'll see how he does on both these points. I'm very encouraged.
I'll tell you this. Of course, the National Guards that have never been mobilized and sent into Mississippi, Alabama, and Arkansas in the 50s and 60s, but there have been some rumblings, although the administration has denied it, that he was considering mobilizing the National Guard to enforce the laws on immigration. I certainly hope that he would do that and then much more. Let's go quickly because I want to get Jared to plug and Amrin, the conference. We'll have him on to talk about it at much greater detail later on. But tonight we'll at least get a cursory plug. But Chris in Alaska has been waiting quite patiently to offer some comments and perhaps even a question for Jared. Chris, take it away.
Hey, Jared.
Hello.
It's actually Chris from Canada.
Oh, Chris from Canada. My mistake.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, because of the snow, we get confused with Alaska.
Touche. All right, take it away very quickly before we run out of time, but I thank you for waiting.
All right. Jared, do you not find that this whole conversation is a little bit distracting? Because That's what I'm getting based on my research. I notice there's a very powerful influence on everything you're speaking of that is causing us to narrow it down to it being a Republican or a liberal, and it just seems to be getting out of what we really need to be discussing, which is ultimate control by, well, let me say it up front, the Jews.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Chris. Jared, of course, that's a question that you're certainly very well familiar with. A quick answer for that, and then we'll plug the Amarin Conference.
Well, I think that it certainly is something that should be investigated, the role of Jews in Gentile societies. And there's no question that Jews, certainly in the United States, have a amount of influence that is greater than one would expect from their numbers. But I think that it is a mistake to blame everything that goes wrong for the white man on Jews. And at the same time, there are many Jews, I know many personally, who are entirely on our side. So I certainly don't consider the Jews to be an enemy group. They are certainly liberal in many cases, but I think that sometimes people are tempted to shift our responsibility over to that group rather than taking responsibility for ourselves. But
I think that's a very fair answer, and I would agree with this certainly, that at the end of the day, the buck has to stop somewhere. And let's stop making excuses. We can debate that question, and certainly that question is debated in our circles to the point of exhaustion. But at the end of the day, white people are responsible for what white people do.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Or don't do.
As far as the conference is concerned, and I'm delighted that you asked me about this, it's going to be a little bit later than usual. It's going to be in July. It'll be July 28th through 30th in our usual wonderful place in Tennessee, in James's own home state.
And, that's right.
In some respects, I mean, psychologically perhaps, we could even say that the headliner is Peter Brimelow, insofar as he was the one who first, to me, started talking seriously about the idea of a Trump presidential candidacy. I think even certainly before he announced, certainly maybe even before even Trump thought about it. But he had this idea that one politician, one speech, one election could make a huge difference. And so he's going to be giving his talk on the Trump report card so far. Now, that'll be in July. And I hope that we'll be in a position to give Donald Trump an A++ by the time we get to July.
It could certainly happen. And I want to just quickly, because time is of the essence, and I want to give you the final word, of course, Jared, as our guest. The 2017 American Renaissance Conference, there are still speakers to be added, although Jared will, of course, be among them, as will Sam Dixon, the closer of every American Renaissance conference, going back to its inaugural conference many, many years ago. Peter Brimelow, Sam Dixon, Jared Taylor, and others. More speakers still to be announced. The date is July 28th through the 30th, July 28th through the 30th, there at Montgomery Bell State Park near Nashville. You can register online tonight. You can go ahead and reserve that room and pay for your banquet and all of the other associated costs tonight. We would encourage you to do that, because last year's event was the most well-attended conference in Amarin history, so this one will sell out too. Anything I didn't add there, and of course we'll have you back on, Jared, in short order to give a much more detailed breakdown of why people should sign up, but I at least wanted to make mention of it tonight since it was just rolled out a few days ago. Go, Jared.
No, I very much appreciate that, and yes, you're right. Last year, the lodge sold out completely. We have all the rooms. We have all 125 rooms, but they all sold out, and some people had to go to motels that were a bit of a drive away. So the sooner you register, the more you can be confident that you will be where the action is, right at Montgomery Bell State Park. And so I certainly cherish the participation of James Edwards listeners in American Renaissance conferences. They've always been a huge and important contingent, and I welcome and I appreciate you all.
Well, we endorse it 100%, and there's no place I would rather my audience be that last weekend of July than with you, Jared, with us, I should say. Keith and I will be there. And we can't wait to see everybody. And you can get a little more information tonight, although, again, as I mentioned, in addition to the great speakers that have already been announced, there will be more unrolled here in the next few weeks. But you can go ahead and reserve your spot now, and we would encourage you to do so because it will sell out. So go to amren.com this evening. They're featured prominently on the homepage in the right-hand corner. You'll see the icon for the 2017 Confab. And what more can we say than that, Jared?
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for your promotion, and keep up your good work. You are one of the stalwarts of our movement, James, and it's always an honor and a pleasure to be your guest.
Well, you'll be a guest again soon. I appreciate the compliment, and of course, we're members of a mutual admiration society, and we look forward to having you back on. You're with us pretty regularly, and that won't change this year, I can tell you that much. Jared Taylor, everybody, amren.com for more information about the conference. We'll be back with the third final hour right after this.
Cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.